It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, those of us who've been around a little longer remember that politics in this country haven't always been as bitterly partisan as they seem to be today. This hour, my guests are two former U.S. congressmen who served Iowa during the 1980s and 1990s, Republican Jim Ross Lightfoot and Democrat Dave Nagel. They were around in Congress serving our state during the presidencies of Ronald Reagan, of George H.W. Bush, and to some degree the Clinton presidency as well. And they join us both by phone now. Dave Nagel joining us from Waterloo. Welcome to our program. So pleased to have you, Congressman.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. It's always nice. I think Jim will agree with me. It's always nice when we're remembered.
Jim Ross Lightfoot joining us from Texas. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
So I'm so excited to have your perspectives, as I think many of our listeners are, because, well, first and foremost, so often today, and you hear it, I'm sure, as much as I do, this hyper-partisan atmosphere at the root of many people's unhappiness with the functioning of government. You have a long view, each of you, as a congressman. You've worked in the machinery of government over a period of years, now more than two decades ago. Broadly speaking, let me start with Jim Ross Lightfoot. How would you describe the change in Congress since you were there in Washington?
Well, I think in the short terms that Dave and I tried to be the grease that was in the gears that made the thing work, and now both parties are trying to be the sand in the gears that shut it down. We had a much more bipartisan approach to things. There was a lot more comedy and a lot more comradeship than you see there today. Last trip I made to D.C. was like probably 3 years ago, and I took an extra day just to go up on the hill and maybe touch bases with some old friends and one thing another, and I was absolutely blown away by the anger and the hate that was in the air. The two parties just, you know, they just hate each other. They don't want to work together. And that's where I think that we've got the train off the track. Dave, and, you know, he can argue this one way or the other, but when we were there, we worked together on things. Sure, there were things we didn't agree on. That's human nature. That's what you're put there to do, is to work out your differences. But we work together on things, and I think the Iowa group was somewhat unique in that we tended to, as a group, be in tune with what was going on across the state. I, you know, was over in the western part for the most of it, and eventually went all the way over the Mississippi River. But we knew what was going on in Dave's district, and he knew what was going on in ours. And if there were things we could do to work together to make it better for Iowa, we did.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's what's changed. It's gone from a group of men and women who disagreed, but they did it in a respectful manner, and they worked together, to a group of men and women that really just don't care about each other.
Dave Nagel, do you share that assessment?
It's so typical of my relationship with Jim. When he's done speaking, I say, well, I agree with Jim.
not always in your history, but all right. on this point, yes.
But let me take it in a little different direction.
Okay.
I like politicians, and I know that's hearsay right now, but a good politician is an individual who can hear the voices of contending factions and not only find the common ground of agreement between what they're saying, but reconcile it into a course of action upon which a majority will embrace. There is a rigidity now of political thought that was absent when Jim and I were there, in that if we could find something that both sides wanted, it may have been different things, we were able to put that package together into legislation. I think, for example, and Jim was there, we did the farm crisis bailout, which a number of financial institutions wanted a bailout for the farm credit system, and a number of agriculture groups wanted a foreclosure on mortgages. Well, we put it both together. It got 269 votes when it passed the House. Republicans were working for it because it represented some of the things they thought was essential, the secondary mortgage market. The Democrats thought it was essential because of the foreclosure and the drop in land values resulting from that. So, you know, what we tried to do was to find what each side wanted, what was most essential to them, and then figure out a way to make it work. That's being a politician, and I don't think I think we need more of them.
Mm-hmm.
Not the one that says what people want to hear, but the one that hears what people say and tries to bring a consensus of a majority into action.
So Congressman Nagel, what has happened in the last 20 years to drive us away from consensus to a large degree erase that middle ground upon which you and Congressman Lightfoot worked?
I think part of the contribution is the evolution of media into attacks, into leaving each side polarized as being an extreme. So you can't look to the middle ground because you've been cast if you win the election, you've been cast as a reprobate. And if the fellow that lost it isn't much inclined to work with you either. So, you know, I think part of it's the tenor and the tone of the campaigns are so much more vicious. I think that's part of it. But I also think there's something else. And, you know, and Jim, I'm interested in you. But I just hated when members of Congress got up and stood on the floor and said, members of Congress don't understand. And they're a member of Congress. So I think there's also a tendency to bash the institution in which they served. And I think, and I'll be quick, I think when Jim and I were there, there was more of appreciation of our unique position that we held. We're the only group that could decide whether this country would go to war or not. We were 435 of that time 290 million Americans charged with the responsibility of maintaining the Union. And I think there was a higher sense of the importance and the uniqueness of our position that we both shared, whether a Republican or a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
That's been lost.
Congressman Lightfoot, your thoughts on what's been driving us apart politically in Washington?
Well, again, I'm like Dave. I don't want to sound like a repeater, but I agree with everything he just said.
right.
So that's why we got along.
Which is one of the reasons, yeah. I think basically, you know, you're probably right, Dave, that we didn't agree on everything, but we weren't supposed to. My take on it is pretty much what Dave just described. But I think one other thing I would throw into it, and I think it's a pox on the leadership of both parties, that they took their eye off the ball, that our purpose there was to serve the country. And it became such a huge power grab from both sides that it got to the point that anything goes, if we can get our way. It was our way or the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of an attitude doesn't get you any place in a legislative body. And I also agree with Dave that his definition of a politician, I think it was excellent. It ought to be engraved somewhere and make everybody that's in politics read it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were sent there to listen to the people of our state. And we were sent there to honor the Constitution, to honor the laws of this country, and to have debate within that set of laws and do it in a meaningful kind of way. And if you look at history, there's been some pretty raucous sessions of Congress back many years. You'll find, there was a gunfight once on one of the steps, as I recall. And I think a congressman shot a reporter, if I remember right.
Somebody else got beat with a cane.
Yeah.
There was another one got beat with a cane. So, you know, it hasn't always been cream and sugar and, you know, how many cubes of sugar do you want in your coffee?
The boys and girls don't always act the same way in the cloakroom as they do when they're on the floor.
No, and that's a good thing. That's the reason they have cloakrooms. That's why they called a cloakroom, and that has nothing to do with clothing. It's where you can go and hide your differences. But on the other side of the coin, and getting back to when we worked together. I don't remember what the issue was now, but I remember Dave came looking for me on a weekend.
Avenue of the Saints.
Oh, that's what it was. Yes, the Avenue of the Saints. And he ran me down on a weekend, and we got together, and we made that thing work because it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was harder for Jim than it was for me because the minority chair of the Public Transportation Committee was trying to steal it for Illinois, and he just about got it done.
Yeah.
And I need to start a fire in the Republican ranks that they weren't going to go with this because Iowa clearly had the better project. And so I got a hold of Jim. We got Fred Grandy into it. You remember? We got Dick Gephardt.
Yep.
And we saved that thing at the last possible minute. Could have saved it without Jim and Fred coming in and helping me.
Gentlemen, I want to remind our listeners, if they've just tuned in, we're reminiscing a bit, comparing Congress then and now. When we talk about then, we're drawing on the expertise, the experiences of Dave Nagel, a former Democratic Iowa congressman, served Iowa in Washington from 1987 to 1993. Jim Ross Lightfoot, former Republican congressman, served from 1985 to 1997. If you'd like to join our conversation, your questions about our politics then and now, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us river2river at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave a message or a question. Suzanne from Grinnell has a comment about what she's heard early on here. Suzanne writing, the Tea Party ran primaries against anyone moderate. Also, a vow to block anything Obama was going to do. This conversation is pitted as everyone is getting more extreme, but I don't think it's an honest appraisal of the situation. We've moved farther to the right than to the left. Would you agree with that as a Republican, Jim Ross Lightfoot? When we talk about each party going to their respective corners, so to speak, and forgetting the moderate middle, has the Republican Party gone to the right more than the Democrats have gone to the left?
Well, that's a good question. One of my pet peeves are labels, because what you label one place is not necessarily what it is somewhere else. For example, between liberal and conservative, Ralph Hall from Texas was a Texas Democrat congressman. And we used to come out of meetings and he would start jabbing me about how I voted on something and calling me, a liberal nut because I went so far to the left. And we were joking about it, but the point is that had he been in Iowa, and Dave would probably agree, he would have been considered a pretty conservative Republican the way he voted on most things. He eventually changed parties. Connie Morella, on the other end of the scale, was very liberal by that definition, but that's what her district was. And she had been in Iowa, she would have probably been at least a moderate Democrat. So the labels confuse things and get things all stirred up. But back to the question, has the whole country moved to the right? I think we, over the last 8 years, took a huge swing towards the left, and we're coming around the corner now and pushing back toward the right. I don't think we're there yet, but I think that that was part of why Trump won the election, was because he was able to wire into the unrest that is felt by a lot of people. And it's not necessarily party defined. I think it's just over issues.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than
Dave Nagel, jump in there. Do you share that assessment?
I agree with you.
The pendulum coming back to the right after being to the left in Jim Ross Lightfoot's opinion too far to the left.
Well, sure. I know it's coming back to the right. I don't think there's any question about that. But here's going back to that lady's from Grinnell's question though. Part of the problem is that Jim is correct. We put labels on things and say, well, he or she's a Tea Partier, you can't work with them. Well, God bless it. Find the areas you can work on. I remember that when George Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, the 41st president, wanted to do a package to aid the Soviet Union. And Brent Scowcroft, the National Security Council, came and got me. And among other things, I wrote the Democratic candidates for president at that time. It was 92, and said, you better endorse this, because if you don't and you win, you're going to have to do it anyway. And they all did. What we've lost is the capacity to look beyond the label to where we find areas of common agreement. And you can, if you can find those common agreements, it's like standing on a river not looking for the bridge anymore. You know, both sides are locked on their own side. So, and I think that, you know, I think the more we can, and I'll give you one example that just happened. I mean, you know, labor was just absolutely adamantly opposed to NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the president, the new president of the United States, stand up saying I'm junking NAFTA. You know, labor, which is supposed to be hardcore Democrats, suddenly found themselves embracing a Republican president, at least on this issue. We need to do more of that, to find the areas where we can agree with things that cross party lines, or where the other party might be right and embrace it. But I think stridency is going to remain for a period of time until the public starts asking for something else, and that maybe it's old voices like us that can help steer that conversation in the right direction.
Okay, join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Plenty of people who want to weigh in as they hear Congressman Dave Nagel, Jim Ross Lightfoot, former Iowa, U.S. Congressman who served Iowa in the 1980s and 90s. Let's go to Ed in Iowa City. Hi, Ed. What do you want to chip in?
What I want to chip in is that there seems to be a real disincentive to compromise these days. And what I'm wondering is, you know, I know pork barrel spending increases the deficit, but with pork barrel spending, it gave parties or, you know, congressmen that had maybe, it gave them incentives to maybe support bills. And it gave, if you're trying to get a bill passed, you can you know, have something for your district,
earmarks.
For your district, and it got more
earmarks.
People on board.
Your earmarks,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so your question, Ed, is perhaps we lost that incentive. Jim Ross Lightfoot, do you think bringing earmarks back would help?
Well, that's sort of like taking a knife to a gunfight. You're probably going to lose. As far as the earmarks go, they're good and bad. I had no problem with a mark that was for a project that really was needed and was justifiable. A quick example, a standing congressman now, Peter Visklosky from Indiana. Pete and I were elected in the same class, and we've been friends ever since. And he had a courthouse in his district in Indiana that when I was on the Public Works Committee and then on the Appropriations, made a trip to Indiana. And this thing was a building that was totally worn out. I mean, the plumbing was bad, the electrical wiring was bad. The building was worn out. It far outlasted its uses, and there were people sitting virtually on top of each other because they didn't have any room inside. So Peter put a request in for a new courthouse, and this was during the Clinton years, and there was some vote that folks in the Clinton machine didn't like that Peter had cast. So when bill went to the White House for their approval, their people went through and they struck his courthouse out of the bill. In my opinion, it didn't make any difference if it was Peter Visklosky or Dave Nagel or whoever. The building was needed, and the price on it was reasonable. It was where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to my staff guy and I said, look, let's put Peter's house back into the bill, But maybe we should describe it differently so that it doesn't look like it's his courthouse.
Okay, quickly, we're coming up to a break. Dave Nagel, you see both good and bad in turning back to earmarks?
The time you've allotted me doesn't allow me to answer the question. Why don't you go to your break and then
we've got a couple minutes.
Well, here's the first thing. First of all, I liked earmarks. Hell, the Avenue of the Saints an earmark, but most people don't know that. But it was. But here's the thing about it. To me, it was always more philosophical. It was an abrogation, in my judgment, of correct congressional responsibility to turn a decision of which projects would be built, which projects would be funded, which projects would be discarded to unelected officials that happened to run the particular federal department that was administering that specific program. I've always felt that was our responsibility to make those decisions, and if you built something like the famous Road to Nowhere in Alaska, then the public would hold you accountable. I also think it helped, and Jim spoke earlier of Greece, I think it helped move bills through, particularly appropriations bills, if the members had a stake in it and if the members' district was benefiting from it. But, you know, but going beyond that, our current congressman here in the first district, Rod Bloom, keeps calling for regular order. And one of the things I think it's necessary for is the Congress to get back to regular order.
What does that mean?
That means that leadership doesn't hand you a bill that they've put together, And then the caucus is supposed to vote on it, and then the body as a whole is supposed to vote on it. It means it goes through the subcommittee process to the committee, through the rules committee, and then onto the floor. It means you get the input at the very basic level in front of a congressional subcommittee and then a full committee that has expertise in that area, where both the concerns of the majority and the minority are heard in fashioning the legislation. But we seem to now work more by, even more than what we were then, by continuing resolutions where leadership decides what's going to be introduced, when it's going to be introduced, who's going to introduce it, and who's going to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the members who have valuable input are shut out.
So it's been short-circuited a little bit. We do have to go to a break now. Congressman Dave Nagel with us, former Democratic congressman, served from 87 to 93. Jim Ross Lightfoot, congressman, a Republican, served from 85 to 97. A wealth of sort of expertise, the long view on our politics. When they served under Presidents Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and Bill Clinton. We want to get to more listener calls and questions via our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. When we come back, we'll talk more about our current politics through this long lens. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, looking at Congress then and now, and who better to talk to than two former congressmen who served Iowa in the 80s and 90s. Jim Ross Lightfoot is with us, a former Republican congressman, served from 85 to 97. Dave Nagel, Democratic congressman, served from 87 to 93. So the presidents they worked with, Reagan, George H.W. Bush, the first President Bush, also Clinton for Jim Ross Lightfoot. We'd like to have you join our conversation. Your questions about our politics then and now for our guests, 1-866-780-9100. Back to our callers and the other input we have for you, gentlemen, in just a moment. But I wanted to ask each of you, Jim Ross Lightfoot, we have a lot of callers, so I'm asking for sort of a briefer answers this half hour. We want to get to as many callers as possible. Have you considered how you would fit into today's congressional atmosphere? You talked about that visit about 3 years ago when you saw so much anger. Could you exist? Would you exist in such an atmosphere in Congress these days?
Probably not. And thank you for reminding me about talking too much. Dave will probably admit that's somewhat of a disease most of us have been in this business are infected with.
You want us to be brief?
Yeah.
We have a lot of people who would like to bend your ears, gentlemen. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's like we're going to climb Mount Everest. One quick thing I would like to add, though, to what Dave said a minute ago about regular order. He's dead on, absolutely right. And what people, I think, forget is that when our founders put this thing together, they put together laws and regulations by which the Congress was to function. in order to make it difficult to pass legislation, in order to make sure that everything was debated properly and both sides got a chance to put their 2 cents worth in. And calling for regular order is, in my opinion, the one thing that would fix a lot of what's going on in Congress today. We'd have budgets. We haven't had a budget in several years. You can't run your household that way. So I think Dave's dead on with his comments about regular order, and I didn't know that Rod Blum was pushing it, but congratulations to him. I hope he pushes as hard as he can, because regular orders is part of the key to getting at least the House back on track.
Dave Nagel, could you imagine yourself in today's Congress?
I wouldn't want to be there. I wouldn't, because it's not my style. And I don't mean that, you know, I'm flamboyant or anything like that. But no, you know, I like members of Congress. I like people on the other side. I like talking with them. I like playing golf with them. I like working with them. And the other side is the enemy. I don't think I'd be comfortable with it. But then there's another factor. I remember the day I walked up the steps, the first opening session. And my thought was, when I'm walking up those steps, my God, I hope I don't screw this up. And the guard opens the door for me, and he says, "Good morning, Congressman." I don't know how he knew me, but I guess they do. And you have your time in a public office. You have your time to do your job. And do it. And understand that ultimately somebody else is going to take your place. I had my time. Jim had his time. I think we covered ourselves reasonably well in performing our tasks as were assigned to us. But I don't want to go back and ride that horse again.
Okay, let's go to callers, 1-866-780-9100. Dave Nagel, Jim Ross Lightfoot with us, former congressman who served Iowa in the 80s and 90s. Susan in Fairfield, welcome to the program. What's your question?
I wanted to ask the congressman what they feel is the best way to contact our representatives, letters, emails, or phone calls. Also, how are the constituents' views recorded or tallied? I've heard that letters and emails are ignored.
Okay, and you've had some personal experience here. You've been trying to have your voice heard there in Washington, Susan?
Actually, I haven't, but I'm about to, and I thought, which should I do?
Yeah,
email or
sure.
Letter or call?
You want to have the most, have it be effective. Dave Nagel?
Well, I think I don't know the practice now. In the old days, they used to have these postcards or clip-outs that you'd mail to a congressman or a congressional representative. You know, the National Committee to Save Social Security was famous for that. The clip-out card and petitions, that never had as much impact with me as did an individual well-written letter. And particularly if individual letters would come in some volume, then you'd really start paying attention to it.
Mm.
We didn't have emails, but I assume emails what I really liked was the short, relatively concise, different from Jim and I, relatively concise answer, a letter well written was to me the most persuasive.
Okay. Well, Jim Ross Lightfoot, what would catch your attention as a congressman, perhaps? It's perhaps changed, but what do you think is the best way for Susan to make her views known?
Well, I agree with Dave. A well-written letter was worth 10,000 postcards from some outfit that wanted you to vote their way.
Do you imagine that's even true today with
physical
mail
media,
disappearing?
Yeah, social media has had such an impact on communication that neither Dave or I have witnessed from the other end, but I think it has changed the way that people try to communicate. What I would suggest you do, Susan, is go online, look up your representative, find where they have an office. All of them have two or three offices around her district, depending on the size of the district. And I would walk in the door with a letter in hand and talk to that person that's there.
Mm-hmm.
That way you know that you got through the door and the letter's in somebody else's hand. Now, that sounds like a lot of work when this day and age we're so competent at just typing something out and pushing the send button. But in this case, if it's something that you really got an interest in, I would definitely, I'd just go to their office, walk in the door, and hand it to that receptionist or whoever's there, and tell them what your problem is or your solution, and leave it at that.
And look for follow-up in the days to come?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if they don't follow up, I'd go back and see them again. Be a pest. The squeaking wheel gets oiled.
All right. Sounds like some good advice for Susan in Fairfield. Thank you for your call. Let's talk a little bit about specifically our new president. Give us your thoughts, Dave Nagel, on Donald Trump's politics, good or bad for our democracy, for our country.
Well, I don't think you know. I think this guy's been in office, what, 4 days? I think we ought to, first of all, different from my colleagues and maybe more with my historical perception, I think we ought to give him a chance. And I don't think you can judge anything on 4 days. He's done some things that he said he'd do with regards to for his supporters. But on the other hand, he's done some things that the Democrats really shouldn't find fault with yet. I don't think, my favorite historical figure is probably Chester Arthur in terms of coming to the presidency with low expectations. And, you know, I remember when Arthur took the presidency after the assassination of the president, somebody said, good God, Chester Arthur, president of the United States. That's where our civil service came from, with Chester Arthur, who was the recipient of the spoils. So I think anticipation and expectation has to wait until he develops his style. So right now, as far as I'm concerned, the door's open, and as an American, I hope he does well.
Mm-hmm. And do you have no problem saying that, also given the rhetoric that he's tossed out there, the anger, the insults, the way he ran his campaign, which many found distasteful, also Republicans?
We're not measuring him on that. We're measuring him now on what he does for the country. No, I don't agree with his language and his insults and that sort of thing. But I'm focused on policy, not personality. Now, it's hard to divorce the two when you're measuring presidents, but I'm more concerned with what this fellow does when he gets there, what his proposals are, and how he's going to pay for them, than I am the fact that, now, personally, I might find him somewhat persona non grata.
Okay. The jury's out for Dave Nagel on Donald Trump, our new president. Jim Ross Lightfoot, what do you have to say?
Well, I think Dave and I are riding the same horse. He's the first president we've had that didn't come from a political background. So I don't think it's innate with him to think in political ways like any of our other presidents have. I guess Eisenhower didn't come from a political background particularly, but being a general, he knows what politics were all about. He wouldn't have been a general if he didn't. But I'm with Dave. We got to give him time to find out what he's going to do. His approach, I think, is totally different than we've had before. I don't think you can put either a Republican or a Democrat label on it, to be honest with you, at this point in time. So I think let him go. Let's see what happens the first 100 days and look back and maybe make a judgment then. And I think by that point in time, we'll probably have a pretty good indication of where he's going to go with various things. But 4 days, that's not long enough to judge anyone on, particularly in such a high-powered position as a president.
Okay. Jim Ross Lightfoot with us, and also former Congressman Dave Nagel. Final 10 minutes of our conversation. Let's squeeze in a caller. Virginia, I ask you also to be brief from Spirit Lake. What's your question?
My question revolves around the dichotomy the congressman talked about earlier about my way versus the highway business. And I'm wondering if they could compare the role and the impact of lobbyists from the time they served to now.
Okay.
The short answer is I can't. I don't know what they're doing now. When I was there, and I think Jim's probably the same, you listen to them because they bring some expertise about the specific issue that they're hitting you on. But you always take a side. If you're going to talk to a lobbyist for something, it behooves you to talk to a lobbyist that's against it. so that you get both sides. And then listen to the members who can sort through that thing. I think that I think to a certain extent their capacity to influence has increased somewhat because it's such a dollar show out there. But lobbyists, if you can't if you can't listen to a lobbyist and disagree with them, you don't belong in the place. It was always my thought. If you can't stand up to them, then you better go back to being mayor of a small town.
Right. Jim, Congressman Lightfoot, anything to add?
No, I think they've hit it pretty much on the head.
Okay.
They serve a purpose, and I agree with David. I made it a point to talk to lobbyists on both sides of an issue, get their opinion. They're supposed to know how it's affecting the businesses they're involved with, and then you make your decisions from there. I had an instance one time of a relatively high-priced lobbyist who was representing a group from Iowa, and after we finished our meeting, I pulled the leader of the group aside, and I said, look, check your schedule, talk to my secretary, and you come back alone and leave this guy with the wingtip shoes wherever you found him, because I want to know what you really need and what you really want. And David's, I know Dave enough that I know he's the same way. You got to get to the people that really know the issue and what their problems are, and then see if you can work out an answer for them.
We've got just a few minutes left. I have to run this by you since it's consumed so much of our media in the last few weeks. Dave Nagel, how concerned are you about the integrity of our electoral system, given the findings of the U.S. intelligence agencies that the Russians meddled with the aim of helping Donald Trump?
Well, obviously I'm concerned about that. I'm not as concerned that they tried it as I am the fact that we couldn't secure it, that they were able to access that information. And that, to me, is a real warning sign. I mean, if they can, now penetrating the DNC isn't hard to do. Generally, they forget to lock the door when they leave at night. But penetrating the Pentagon or the CIA or the Joint Command, that concerns me. So, I don't think it determined the outcome of the election. I think it's unfortunate if we establish that it happened. But I'm more concerned about the breach of our national security.
Do you think, as Representative John Lewis does, that it raises questions about Donald Trump's legitimacy?
No, I think he won.
Okay, Jim Ross Lightfoot, how do you weigh in there on the Russian meddling in the election?
I agree with David. I believe cybersecurity is probably one of the biggest issues that we face as a country today because of what's going on around the world and the technologies that are being developed and so on. And he won the Electoral College. I think it proves that the Electoral College works. A lot of people don't like it, but they forget that we're a republic and we're not a democracy wherein every individual vote, the majority rules on everything. And the whole purpose of the Electoral College is to allow states like Iowa and Missouri and Nebraska and Kansas and the Dakotas to have a voice in an election where if you just went with the majority, nothing would ever come out of the Midwest. It would all be on the East and the West Coast.
With the remaining minutes, I want to sort of encapsulate a few emails, tweets that we've had here concerning really the way forward, the remedy to a lot of the concerns that have been voiced this hour. Here's a good one that encapsulates it from Joel in Des Moines. Given the state of politics and the media today, do you see a way to get back to parties being able to work together? Dave Nagel, have a first crack at that one.
Yeah. Let's have the public start demanding it. I mean, you pick. One of the things I'd like to see is a reward for civility in public discourse. I'd like to vote for the candidate. I don't care if they're a Republican or a Democrat. I'm a Democrat, but I'll vote for anybody that approaches a campaign on the basis of a difference of ideas rather than a difference of personalities or the fact that the kid in the seventh grade was accused of stealing candy from the school cafeteria. I'd like to see a reward for people who reach across the line. I'd like to see compromise become a value that the public values and votes for. But as long as the public is going to vote for the most strident, we're going to continue to have a problem. If candidates for public office will step up and step to the middle with reasonable discourse and conversation, I think the public has got to reward those people rather than voting on the basis of some hacked, anti-political ad.
Mm-hmm. Congressman Lightfoot?
Short answer. I agree with David.
Riding that same horse.
You see why we got along.
We're standing on the same stump on this one.
Okay, so Congressman Lightfoot, perhaps you can elaborate. How do you reward people? You're saying reward people who compromise, not necessarily one who reflects all your beliefs and punishing those if they step out of line once, but saying, you know, how do you do that in practice?
They get the majority of the votes eventually. David said it a moment ago. There's so many of these hackneyed lines that get used, and elections get bogged down in the minutia. Like he said, you hear days and days of media coverage about uncovering where the guy missed a Sunday school class, 40 years ago. Who cares? And it's just what I've, it's just chaff that's put out there to deflect your attention away from the real person and what they're doing. So how do you reward them? Reward them with success when they do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. We talked briefly about the burgeoning of social media, certainly changing since the time you two gentlemen were in office. We're following fake news. That's probably the phrase of last year, certainly in this last election campaign, playing a big role. Dave Nagel, do we have to reorient ourselves toward the news that we consume be more discriminating?
Well, I think so. What that is one of the troubling things is that has emerged is this attack on the Fourth Estate. In the times of Washington, and not Washington, but certainly Jefferson, it was pretty common to have your own newspaper blasting your opponents. The same was true at the time of Andrew Jackson. I'm a little concerned right now that the mainstream media is being tainted with you're either for the president or against the president. And we need independent sources. I think Jim Ross Lightfoot probably does the same thing I do. Heck, I read the Wall Street Journal, and I read the Washington Times as well as the Washington Post and New York Times, because I hope between those I can find some balance. But I don't like the fact that those sources, if they print something adversarial to a particular party, are discounted as either fake news or in the back pocket of that. I'm worried about the fact that the democracy turns on informed discourse, and I'm worried about the fact the information we're getting is the foundation of it's being undermined.
So you're worried about it being attacked. Donald Trump has attacked the media. He says he's on a war footing or something like that with the media. We have just about a minute or so left. Jim Ross Lightfoot, your views on the media and how we go forward here, fake news, how we deal with it better.
Well, I spent roughly 20 years in broadcasting before the sanity test and ran for Congress. And in those days, it was, what, why, when, where.
Yep.
And you didn't inject any opinion. If you did,
then
you were in big trouble with the management. And that's what we need to get back to, I think, in the media, is more honest, unbiased reporting on both sides.
Very quickly, before we go, just a few seconds to each of you. Our listeners are surely wondering what you're up to these days. Very quickly, Dave Nagel, what busies your time these days?
Oh, I'm just still. I came back. I was blessed. I got two things that I love to do: serve in Congress and practice law. And I'm back in Waterloo practicing law.
Okay, Jim Ross Lightfoot, what are you up to in Texas these days?
I'm just a recovering politician.
He goes to meetings and says, "Hi, my name is Jim."
I hold up my hand. No, actually, pretty much on the retired side of things at
very
this
good.
Point in time.
Well, we thank you for your sharing your time this hour. We appreciate your insights. Congressman Jim Ross Lightfoot and Congressman Dave Nagel, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Good to talk with you, Jim.
Hey, you too, buddy. Good to see you.
Good to be here. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Bye.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, it's a News Buzz edition of River to River. Hope you'll join us. A half a dozen conversations about some news that we didn't get to during our talk shows this week, or also some news that you didn't hear about this week, probably. Thanks for joining us. Join us again tomorrow.